WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia. The following programming is sponsored by Mark J. Bernstein. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Eng Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, Arlo. Saying good morning, my dogs. I had to run out this morning. Didn't get to say hello. Good morning, America. Good morning, Ange. Good morning, RJ, who we'll introduce in a minute. And it's great to be with you live in the studio, which we haven't been for a couple of months. We were on hiatus. And you're here on Founders Forum, where we tell the stories of founders, entrepreneurial founders, and their companies. And very excited about this program this morning. And we always have a topic of the day, and usually we're pretty upbeat and positive. And I still want to be that way, but I do need to talk about death a little bit. Personally, I've gone through a few rough weeks with losing some friends, relatively young friends who had illnesses but weren't expected to go nearly as quickly as they did, and also one younger person that is a son of a friend of mine, actually, who's been a guest and sponsor on the show, died suddenly. And, you know, we're all shocked when those kind of things happen. And I know all kinds of things happened to me in my mind, and you know, could I have done more to be with these people in the way I would have liked to have been? In fact, one of them right now is in hospice right now, and I was there last night, and I wanted to make sure I said everything I needed to say to him, and to make sure the best I could understand that he could hear it, and which I didn't get to do with the prior one. And it just, you know, makes you think about so many things. And and the end result always about when somebody dies is, how did they live their lives, and how can we live our lives and take advantage of the time we have on earth? And, and it's always sort of reinforced when something like this happens. And I know we've all had experiences with this, so I'm looking for the silver lining. So, Ange, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think we probably could do a whole show on it, but, you know, I'm going to take based on the topic today, though, I'm going to take a quick different spin on it, and I think of it, when you first mentioned it, as to something I work on right now is really kind of death of self, the self-ego, and really having that be prominent for me so that I'm waking up every day and saying, am I doing my highest and best use today, and am I shedding the parts of me that, you know, weren't really where I wanted to be, and is that going to help me live my best life and live it in a way that others can, you know, model after it? So I think it's an important topic and a lot of different ways to look at it.
Yep. And well, again, it's a little bit about how you're living your life. RJ, I know you've had some experience with this recently. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Unfortunately, I lost my two in-laws this past summer. Unfortunate circumstances, but they were two individuals in very unhealthy conditions, but they live life to the fullest
and to the end,
to the end. Nice. As much as possible, visiting families, friends, vacations, as much as possible. So my wife and I have taken that to heart. You know, we were like, we need to be able to live our lives that way today.
What age? We were talking about this. To what age?
They're in their 60s.
No, I mean, you're in your wife's
My wife goal. And I are 52, and we hope to live to at least 100.
At least
100.
Thank you for modifying that.
There you go, modifying that. Yeah, pre-show we were talking about just, I want to live to 100, but now it's at least 100 with a good quality of life. I want to enjoy that life. I don't want to sit around. I enjoy reading, but I want to travel. I want to get out there, see the world.
Excellent. So I'm a collector of quotes. We use quotes a lot, and there's one that I'll give you. It says, live as if you were to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were to live forever, Mahatma Gandhi. which I think is very profound. And one other one from Robert Byrne, the purpose of life is a life of purpose, which I think goes to what you were talking about, Ange. And I know that's important to me. I have to have purpose. I have to, and it's one of the things not to, we deal with entrepreneurs here. And one of the things I know we do a lot, in my business, we do a lot of retirement planning and financial independence planning. And, you know, I used to think entrepreneurs should never retire, but of course I can't make that decision for everyone. In fact, my friend that's going through the transition right now did retire and had a very happy retirement because he had a lot of interests. He had lots of things he wanted to do, and he can do that. But my point is have a plan, because if you're used to having this purpose every day and building a business and impacting employees and impacting your customers and clients, and then you go to nothing, it's like driving 90 miles an hour and then a dead stop. And I think a lot of people are aware of that. Some people are less aware and less prepared. So I think it's always important to think about what the you have an ongoing purpose. The people that I've seen often who retire and are not really doing that much get very focused on their health care. And we're going to talk about health care today. And that's not always a good thing. And it, you know, the health starts to get the better of them more quickly, I think. So purpose is important. And on that happy note, let's move on. It is a happy note. I mean, because it is, after all, it's about your life and how you're living. So let me introduce RJ Kedziora. It's tricky, but I think I got it. Co-founder of Astenda, he has over 25 years of software, product design, development, consulting, and management experience. That's a lot. And in the company, he focuses on people and process management and provides strategic technical direction, guidance, innovative insights into creating cost-effective digital health solutions, which we want to talk about, that make a difference in people's lives, helping them live longer and healthier. That's what we're talking about. His work's won multiple awards with HIMSS Davies Award, and recently he received the Health 2.0 Outstanding Leadership Award. And welcome, RJ.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So tell us, like, how you got into, it's pretty interesting. I know you do a lot of, I know you started with research on diabetes, and you're doing a lot of analytics that are helping improve people's lives. We'll talk about that. But how did you get to there? What was your life like up to that point?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. Born in, you know, the early 70s, enjoyed running around outside, and then computers came along, technology. And in seventh grade, my parents were able to afford a computer, an IBM PC Junior, which in the crazy world of computers, that PC Junior had a keyboard that was, you could detach from the computer and sit across the room. I don't know why you would ever sit across the room. I still don't sit across the room. I can't see the monitor. But that led me down my path.
Well, now you could, because you could have an 80-inch
monitor. Now you have an
80-inch
TV screen to be able to do that.
Right.
But, you know, I played tons of games. I, you know, loved playing the games. But also I was very intrigued at an early age of what can I do with this computer? And so I just started programming. Mm. And that led me into college and getting a computer science degree at Duquesne out in Pittsburgh.
Great school, by the way.
It was, and they just, hey, shout out to Duquesne. They made the NCAA tournament for the first time since the early 70s and won the first game. So we'll be back better and stronger next year.
Nice.
Looking forward to it. And you know, going into college, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a PhD in computer science and really focus on AI, which is crazy thinking about that where we are today. In those early days of college, though, I got a job offer and was like, huh. Do I go on to higher education and take on more debt, or go out in the world and start earning a living? And I started earning a living, which got me into the world of programming on a day-to-day basis. And you know, I started out in mainframe programming, got into client-server programming, web programming. And you know, to a lot of people, these things probably don't mean a lot of different things, but they're evolutions in technology and computers and how we use them today. So it went from big, huge mainframes to small personal computers that you're using at home, and then it goes to the web, and then mobile in the early 2000s, and now the age of AI. So I've lived through a lot of those iterations of technology and using them to make better solutions to help people. You know, so right away out of college, I worked for U.S. Steel. big steel manufacturing in Pittsburgh, major manufacturer. They have this steel building. It's like 62 stories, I think, if I'm right. So I was all happy when I was graduating. I was going to work at the steel building, and I was going to be top floor overlooking, you know, Pittsburgh. And I wound up being on the seventh floor. I was like, oh. So, you know, could really see the traffic and the people on the streets, but not up on those high-level, you know, floors. So yeah, I moved on from there and got into consulting, helped build accounting systems, railroad car scheduling systems, inventory management systems, mortgage management systems. You know, so I've done a number of different things. In the early 2000s, I started working with pharmaceutical companies, helping them develop their strategies and tools and technologies to develop new drugs and go through FDA approval, which then
led... This is not with US Steel. This is another
job. This was an evolution through various consulting companies through the late 90s that I was working with.
Got it.
And then I met my business partner, Drew Lewis. He happened to know some people at the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. They had a congressional grant for the development of a diabetes disease management solution for military healthcare. And that was how we started my current company, Astenda Solutions. So we got started in 2003 working with the Joslin Diabetes Center, premier internationally renowned diabetes institute, providing lots of care. But then also Walter Reed Army Medical Center in D.C., Boston VA, the Indian Health Services, which is responsible for the Native American population here in the United States, Tripler Army Medical Base, Lackland Air Force Base. So heavily
Tripler
working.
Tripler in Hawaii.
Tripler in Hawaii.
My wife was born there. That's why I know that.
Nice. Nice. So got to go out to Hawaii quite a bit. Grabbed my wife. She came out with me once, twice. So that was really nice. She tracked me down in a conference room. I still don't know to this day how she found me in this hotel in the conference room, but I had her driver's license, so she couldn't use her credit card to buy the oysters and the pearl jewelry and everything like that. But she found me, so it all worked out, and she's happy. So, but yeah, so, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years of Astenda, you know, we developed various tools and technologies around the idea of diabetes and helping people with chronic conditions. We are the consultants that help others create solutions that they use in-house. So if it's a hospital or a health system like Joslin Diabetes Center, large medical device manufacturers that we've worked over the years with, as they're gathering all of that data and information, how do you make sense of it?
Interesting. I think it's really, I was fascinated when we first talked on the phone on Zoom, and you're doing great work. It sounds like an easy, smooth ride. And I know that your business is kind of steady, and it might be smoother than many, but I also know as an entrepreneur, it wasn't a straight line. I'm sure you had some challenges along the way. So what kind of things did you face, and how did you handle those?
Yeah, definitely face challenges. Nothing is ever a straight line, but it's interesting. Our story is one of growth. We talk about ourselves as more of a lifestyle business historically. We've never done that typical sales and marketing. We are now in the last year, 18 months, starting to do that. And as we would work with one PhD researcher, doctor, professional, and they would leave an institution, they would go to another institution, and we would carry on that work. The first 10, 12 years of our world were grant-focused. So this was one of those challenges, as we would find businesses and companies, community health centers, who don't have a lot of money. How do we help them develop these tools and technologies? So we went after and got grants from National Institutes of Health, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation over the years. The military has facilities to do grants for various different institutions. The very long sales cycles in terms of getting those going. So today we're split, you know, commercial work with, you know, commercial organizations, Fortune 50 businesses, but still continue that grant-based research, because what we enjoy doing as an organization is focus on the innovative side of business. How can we create something that's new to help people live longer, better lives?
Getting grants is competitive, so there are some challenges there, I would imagine.
Yes, it is very competitive. It's one thing for me and the groups of people we work with to think it's a great idea. We're going through, I just submitted an SBIR grant on Friday. SBIR is a Small Business Innovative Research Grants through the National Institutes of Health to do work around the idea of smell testing. So it's one of those things until COVID happened and people started losing their sense of smell, people didn't really think about it that much. There wasn't a lot of research dollars. Mm. It is now an imperative of the NIH and the various divisions to promote the idea of smell testing. So we put in a grant for this, and in the first round, we didn't get it. So now it's like, okay, revise, repeat, how do we make it better? We have a much stronger, better grant application going in this time. So we're crossing our fingers. We hope to get that. But even if we do get it, it's 8-9 months before we'll see any of that funding. So definitely a challenge.
That's great. Listen, that's a great time for us to take a one-minute break, and we'll be back in 1 minute with Founders Forum.
Ready to revolutionize healthcare? Astenda is your partner in digital health innovations. With over 21 years of experience, they specialize in transforming health data into actionable insights that drive real change. From pioneering AI solutions to advanced clinical research and development, they're leading the way in optimizing patient care. Discover how Astenda can empower your healthcare organization with cutting-edge technology and transformative solutions. Visit Astenda.com. That's Estenda.com. Now to learn more and start transforming healthcare today. Don't wait. The future of healthcare starts here with Astenda.
We are back with Founders Forum. And this is the time of the show when we're going to talk about the company a bit. And Ange is my resident corporate hippie, is going to talk about culture with you, RJ, and ask you a little bit about what's going on that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, RJ, I'm really interested and have so many intersections in my own career to the kind of work that you do and the places that you do it. I have my own sort of a government-funded DBE-based firm, so I understand all the challenges on the government side, but also have been, you know, recruiting executives in both healthcare, life sciences, you know, for many, many years. And so one thing I'm curious about for you is the market for technology talent is just at an all-time high, and it's going to remain that. So as you think about the growth and the need for the products that you do, tell us a little bit about the culture that exists today, but how are you thinking about this as the future of work? You know, how do you stay competitive and attractive to bring talent in, make them feel like, you know, it's exciting and it's cutting edge, and, you know, do you look at people that have maybe an eye for consciousness, as I call it, someone who wants to be in a purpose-driven type of product. So just tell us a little bit about how you manage the workforce today and how you're thinking of it moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hiring technologists, software developers, quality assurance is challenging, and we do have several job openings, so check out our site, Astenda.com. We focus on healthcare, and that is a natural driver of people. People love helping other people. So that's sort of the first thing that really helps us recruit people. I don't often have to convince people to come work for us. They're finding us because we are in healthcare.
By the way, I assume you're attracting tech people that aren't necessarily in healthcare before, but they're technical people that are attracted to it because they can have some purpose.
It is. It's that sense of purpose really helps drive everything we do. And it is a mix of people. Some do have experience in healthcare, medical software development, FDA-validated software development. Others don't. But we do two things from that culture perspective, really driven by the idea of empathy. You need to understand what that person is going through that you are helping with, whether it's the doctor caring for a patient or the patient themselves providing care for themselves, for a loved one, for, you know, one of their children. You have to understand that. Technology is necessary, but it's really about the people and the process. As a software developer, you're not developing for yourself. You're developing for someone else that's potentially going through a life-altering situation. So we do provide medical training. You're never going to be a doctor or a nurse or anything like that. But, you know, we take advantage of it's just the fact that there is so much information out there on the internet. Joslin puts out content, Stanford, MIT, Harvard. They all put out great content to be able to train people on what does it mean to have a particular condition and live through that and how we can help. And then internally, we embrace that idea of empathy. How do we help each other? And it's driven even in our professional development process. We ask you, go through a self-assessment. It's like, how have you helped others, in what you do? As a software developer, it's when you're writing code. How are you helping the next person to look at that code? How are you helping the person test it? Not just the final end user. How are you helping through that entire cycle? And one of the things I really like, we implemented what we call a thank you program. We operate remotely now. And so instead of someone coming into the office, for the most part, bringing in donuts or coffee in the morning kind of thing, it's like you can send somebody a gift certificate to Starbucks, to wherever they may like in that area. But the company funds that. So it really helps promote that idea of like, hey, thanks for, X, Y, and Z that you may have done today. Just a nice little touch.
So if I just kind of summarize a couple of things I heard, I think this will be really helpful for any listener who has a business too, is number one, in reverse order, you're really attacking the employee engagement, which is letting them know that we see you, we hear you, you're valuable, whether you're in front of us or not, and the company doesn't balk at, funding that. So I think that's really huge. I think the second part is really giving what I refer to as self-leadership, asking that person to come in and say, don't expect the company just to kind of provide only for you. What role are you willing to take in this? And then assessing that and using that as a way to match them to your culture. And then the first thing you mentioned, which I put last because I love this, which is you're actually, I don't think enough companies understand this, that you're providing opportunities for them to grow and to grow in their own skill set beyond their function. So teaching them about things in healthcare and conditions, because that does affect every human. I think that's amazing, because to me, that's kind of puts the cherry on top of what purpose-driven work really is. But it's a byproduct, because they'll always have that training. They can take more technology training, but that, being able to do that, I think is really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it makes a difference in what we do every day.
So there it is again, life purpose keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And look, I think we have a whole generation of people, young people today, many people of our generation don't understand. But I think there are different types of workers, because they're looking for purpose and they want to feel that their work is important and significant, which is way more of a plus than anything. And I think it behooves us to figure out how we help them serve that purpose.
It totally does. And I want to say one quick thing on that. I had a conversation just last night with a leader friend that I have, and I was commenting that at the beginning of my executive search career, and I had known how to recruit and I was learning that very well, but we had one of our first major pharma companies from this area who sent 3 or 4 of their executives and scientists out to our facility for an entire day and a half, took our whole team, and they taught every one of us the entire drug development and pharmaceutical process from the molecule to post-marketing. And that has stayed with me and parlayed into my career and everyone that I've ever worked with, because we learned something beyond just our function. But what I think is important about this, Mark, is that companies are hiring other companies to provide services, but I don't think that many of them are willing to become a true partner anymore in that. So if you can take some time out and go to the business of your vendor or partner, supplier, consulting company, and bring them into your world in that way, it strengthens not just the work that the outcome, but it does have people. I mean, I didn't know anything about science, but I've spent 30 years feeling purposeful when I'm recruiting leaders into this, because I understand it now from the very beginning. So I think it's all a very important point to keep in mind.
And it sounds like you're very conscious of that, in terms of, it's not an unconscious thing. You guys are bringing purpose intentionally to the table, which is, I think, amazing. Let's talk about you personally a little bit. One of the things I know you like to do on the side is you're a triathlete, which I think is pretty cool. And we were talking earlier, Angie, you weren't here for this, but RJ is a natural runner, so he did a lot of running, and I assume he's a competent cyclist, but was weakest in swimming, and he has an interesting coaching story as to how he became a swimmer.
Yes, I did get my start running. Did a couple marathons over these years, and that's just constant running is rough on the body. So it's like, okay, I got to transition to something, and found triathlon, fell in love with triathlon many a year ago. And I was a competent runner. Cycling I was pretty good at. I was consistently in the back of the pack you know, one of the dead last people in terms of swimming. Just not very good. My daughter, who happened to be 10 at the time, was swimming for the local rec league kind of thing and learning how to swim as well. I was like, Emma, help me out. Like, you're learning how to swim. So imagine a little 10-year-old saying, okay, Dad, here, this is what you need to do. Da-da-da-da-da. Give me five laps, then come find me on deck. And
you said she jumped into the role pretty well.
She jumped into it beautifully. And now I consistently can finish in the top third. I'm not winning any swimming competitions, but I'm in that top third consistently now. And so she made a huge difference just at the age of 10. So.
It's amazing. Willingness to learn, always. We said that at the beginning of the show, right?
Yep. Such a great story that is. So I want to ask you about your future vision, RJ. So if this were April of 2034, and you were looking back on the last 10 years, what would have to happen in your life professionally, so obviously your business, and personally for you to feel that was a successful 10-year period?
Yeah, with the Stenda, we've had the fortune of helping large corporations, but also some startup organizations. So in that 10-year vision, I definitely want to see Stenda grow and change from more of that lifestyle business into a self-sustaining business where I don't have to be involved as much in that day-to-day, such that I can then go and help out more of those startup organizations and really help drive a bigger corporate culture across organizations and make a bigger impact in the world. So we develop software solutions today that are helping large populations of people, but how do I help and empower other companies to do that on a greater and greater basis? I started getting involved with an organization called HitLab in New York City to help start that journey and just do that. I have helped a few startups over the years. Here
is this volunteer work, or these are nonprofits?
Paid engagements at this point.
Okay,
that's
gotcha.
You know, it's
that's a good thing.
Got to sustain the business. Yeah, can't complain. Right. But you got to sustain the business. So to be able to give back even more and not do those as paid engagements in that 10-year horizon, but also kick back a little bit more, do a little bit more travel, a little more triathlons. You know,
nice.
Upgrade to a you know, better bike. It's sort of the dream of every triathlete out there. You know, what's that next bike that you're gonna get?
I'm a biker. I want to ask you offline about the bike. In regard to your vision question, and since we don't have a lot of time left, I did want to ask you about your legacy, because I think that was hinting at your legacy. So what does that look like for you?
It is just that. It's hinting at my legacy. It's like, how do I make the biggest impact in the world? Like, in my view of the world, that's how I'm going to be remembered. What is that impact? You know, I have two daughters. They're great. They're out there doing their thing. They're making their impact. How can I make the biggest impact on the world?
One other quick fun question. Favorite books. What do you like to read?
I have to go back to Isaac Asimov series of books called iRobot that he wrote in the 50s. But it really launched me on my career, my life. I still go back and read those every now and then. And it's just the ideas that are in those are still coming true today. And if you're not working with Gen AI today, start working with Gen AI today.
I think that's great. I think we're just about out of time on Founders Forum. So thank you for being here, RJ. It was great, really interesting show, and great to be back in the studio with you, Ange and TJ. Thanks for your production and engineering help. And all of you have a great day, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Founders Forum.